And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah! No fear, no fear, no fear, but we are relatively concerned. We had the Democratic Party POTUS debates of whatever last night, and I just couldn't bring myself to watch. I watched some highlights and so on, but there's another round tonight that's going to be Biden and Tulsi and somebody, and I don't care. You know, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with an anti-war warrior up there going, not so much. And we'll see what happens. Of course, Google and them have done everything they can to, you know, keep them out. Bob Anderson made a good point, Tim. Tim, I got you there.
Hey, Ernie, everybody.
Okay. Yeah, I had the wrong button then. Okay, this is what Bob made mention of, I thought was interesting. He goes, you know, a week or two ago, he's on Sean Hannity, we're doing away with the restriction on the death penalty for federal cases. And you go, death, 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 and we can put you to death. Really? Okay, well, they get some, you know, high profile, he's a really bad guy, you know, death things. And whatever your view on that is, I'm like, government doing death penalty. I believe in the death penalty at the time of the crime. You know what I mean? It's like, boom, you're a bad guy dead. But, the government doing it, I'm not feeling warm and fuzzy about it. But the timing was with all of these treasonous acts by people. If the federal government brings out the death penalty and they get you for treason, you know, yep, we're going to send somebody's going to the gallows. You think that might be possible, or is that, can, you know, Trump kind of giving that threat? Does that cross your mind, Tim?
Not really. I mean, I think a lot of people are holding their hopes out that, you know, 10,000 people are going to be frog marched out to Guantanamo, and that, you know, it's all part of the plan, and just, you know, the next step is just around the corner. Except, you know, we're only at the point now, and I ain't saying we, but, you know, Trump could only have another 2 years in office, at which point a lot of this chance that the Republicans had to actually get the economy and get things back on course have been completely squandered. And I know that your audience knows this, but today actually is a pretty big historic day because the Federal Reserve is going to be cutting rates. More than likely, is going to be announcing their cutting rates.
For sure. For sure. They keep threatening kind of keep that stock market going, kind of for sure they're going to cut. To what?
They more than likely are going to cut 25 basis points today. And then some people are holding. There's about a 25.
Okay, now a basis point, let's go ahead and say 25. That is like 0.25 of a percent.
Yeah.
Okay, so a 0.25% is a lot, you know, don't you think, at one time?
It's actually pretty standard. So they usually
quarter percent.
So they usually move in 0.25% increments. And actually, yes, last night, I don't always do this, but I did do a little bit of show prep today. And I actually sort of like have like a history and chronology of different rate cuts and where this sort of precludes to where we've been and where we're going when the Fed's had to do these types of moves in the past. And I also think that this is about as vindication for myself and probably a lot of your listeners and viewers right now, which I do want to point out. You can watch us right now at dlive.tv/Ernest Hancock. I don't know why it's not working on Facebook. I was just trying to screw around with it 2 seconds ago. But if you go back to August 7th of...
Because it's Facebook, that's why. I'm shocked we're still on YouTube. You know, we got Twitch and DLive and DTube and all that. You go on to the... all right, audience, real quick so I can show
you. And there's another one, too, that we can start pimping that I'm going to add for you, Float. So you can also stream live to Float, and Float is Kingsley Edwards.
I'm trying to, you know, see where they're going with that. You know, here, go into, when you go up at the top right up here, you go into the show. Now, you can, you have Twitch and YouTube and some others. You go into the shows, and they'll have some more options. You know, this is when DLive, Twitch, YouTube. And then over on the left over here, you know, it's right there. You just go, see, we go YouTube. You click on that, and we'll see if it's working live. And live with Ernest, and it's probably, there it is.
No, it's right.
All right. So, you know, we got these, but I haven't really pushed them in so long. I'm seeing which ones will last and how long it'll stay up and what, and then we'll start making a big deal about it. If I find one that will stay up, that the restream works with, and that they're not taking down. And then we'll just pimp the living crap out of it. But which one? I get a call from a good friend of ours that we had parties at, you know, up in Vegas and so on. We, you know, his name not to be said. But what happened is he called me. He sent me a text. He said, get this app, and he sent me a picture of it. He didn't want to say it in the text. And I go, all right, so I loaded up and everything. He's calling from around the world or something. And that is, boy, they were testing, beta testing of Pirate Communications. It is an encrypted video, audio, text, everything, none your business, from device to device, and it has to, the app has to be on for it to work because there's no server between. And I'm going, really? You know, well, I go, can they see my screen? Well, then they can see it. And he goes, not on the new privacy phone that we're building and we got in here, and don't buy another phone. It's coming out soon, Ernie. And I go, okay. So we got that coming. So if we do Pirate Communications, I'm all over it. One other thing I wanted to get to, we get to your Fed thing, and we'll start in the next break. I mean, after the break. Trump disappoints hawks with plan to renew nuclear waivers on Iran. Did you see this?
I have not.
Okay, so what, you know, Trump is doing, there's the P5 plus one nuclear deal, which is these, I guess, nuclear countries that have the ability to, I don't know, boycott and ban, and you're not allowed, and we're the only ones. But they're going to continue supporting Iran's civilian program with enriching uranium to have nuclear power. So Trump's like, ah, no, that's cool. We do what? You know, now, of course, Pompeo and Bolton are like, no, they can't get in. They freak out and everything. But, you know, this looks like it's going to be a thing. You know, reason will prevail. So
who's helping to advise him over there now is actually Rand Paul. So Rand Paul interjected himself to try to be a countermeasure against John Bolton.
You know how that came about? It's a couple weekends, they're out golfing. You know, they're like, you know, Rand goes, hey, man, let me be the umpire. Let me take point on this thing. Nobody else is doing it. I'm not looking to go to war with anybody. Let me do it. And he goes, okay. And they, you know, nice golf shot. I mean, you know, so, and it's done. That's how business is done. You want to do business with a businessman, and he's president, you do it on the golf course. Now, that's probably what Obama did. So, to different ends. All right, now, preface, and when we come back, preface on what you're going to be telling us about on the Fed interest rates. You're going to give us a history and what happened or something. What are we going to be talking about?
Yeah, so I got a whole bunch of different stuff. I mean, I don't know how sexy of a topic this is, but, you know, today it will be the first time in almost 11 years since the Fed has cut rates. But, you know, if you go back to 2007, you know, and all the wheels hadn't fully fallen off the economy and the Fed was cutting rates back then. So kind of giving like a chronology of what happened, you know, leading up to the 2008 crisis, from, you know, everything was fine and until the day it's not fine, until, and sort of basically comparing that to what's going on right now as well. And then I've got some different charts of basically, you know, central bank asset prices and how asset levels and how that, you know, relates to the stock market, and basically try to wade ourselves through this whole artificial reality that's been created. That really, I mean, I think this is basically the absolute vindication, because a lot of us, you know, who are listening right now, said that the Fed could never raise rates. So here we are. Here we are at the critical juncture, strongest economy ever, but now we've got a lower rates later today.
All right. They've been prepping us for this and making a big deal out of it. If they don't, you know, something will happen. It'll break if they, I mean, they've already did fait accompli, man. It's already done. We're going to find out and what might happen because of it. We'll see.
from the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the Crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the Crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the Crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The Crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Hey, Tim, have you seen this?
Not in person. I think I've seen a picture of it. Now I'm seeing a video of it.
All right, here, wait.
Oh, the Babylon Bee has a really funny headline right now. It goes, "Nation torn between watching Democratic debates and sticking face in blender."
Bass-o-matic. Okay. All right.
It's pretty cool. I got the precariat. Did Bob Anderson do that?
Yeah, he got the file from Cameron, you know, created the basic file, and then he had to do it in, like, I don't know, four parts or something. But it is cool. We can make it probably twice this size if we do it in pieces. And then I'm going to, you know, kind of sand it and, you know, kind of finish it up a little bit and paint it. And Bob's going to do another painted one. So then once you get this, we can start doing, I don't know, I'd like to get it lighter. I need it hollow so that I can get kind of the CG is about here. Let's see, about there. And I just want to know, see if I can get it on a pin in a wind tunnel thing. I want to see what the aerodynamics of this is. Because I think this is like a going concern, man. This is a thing. It could very well be a design that would work. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay, we're about 30 seconds. So I got music. All right, we're set. All right, so you got your charts and stuff. You're going to be sharing crap?
Yeah.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Here at Visa Zone 98, where we're talking to Tim Pachote, Liberty Advisor. He's going to give us some, you know, yay, graphs and charts and stuff. Yay. All right, so what am I looking at? What's this mean? Oh, wait, I got to push the button. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So right now we're looking at the history of Federal Reserve, basically action or inaction that they've taken over the past 12 years. But I think it's first important to kind of maybe rewind back to October of last year. And at that time, Jerome Powell, I think one of his quotes was, "We are far from the natural rate of interest." And then, you know, he also went on to say that, you know, basically the rate hikes were on autopilot, which means that, you know, every essentially quarter they were going to hike them by 25 basis points. He also, you know, went on to say that the, you know, selling the assets off the balance sheet every month, that was also on autopilot. We've got Donald Trump saying that we're in the greatest economy ever. And so going back to October, nobody was calling for any sort of rate cuts. And actually going back all the way to the end of December, when the plunge protection team came out and Mnuchin and all the cavalry came to save the market around Christmas time, even then, I think there was only about a 2% chance of a rate cut that was priced in for this year. And that is precisely when I came out with a client video called When's the Next Rate Cut? December 28th, when there was a 2% chance of that happening this year. And now it's going to happen 10 o'clock Pacific, 2 o'clock Eastern time is when they are going to make the announcement. But if we go back to, you know, where the really opening salvo was in the 2007-2008 crash, we're going to take it back to August 7th of 2007. The Fed Reserve met and said, okay, you know, everything's going good. We're going to keep rates the same. And then you go only 10 days later to August 17th, 2007, and all of a sudden now the Fed's getting a little bit worried that things aren't going as smoothly as they were hoping. And what they did was, previously there had pretty much always been a 1% difference between the Fed funds rate and then the rate that that banks borrow money from the Fed. So the banks would borrow money at 6.25% in August 7th, 2007, but essentially the Fed funds rate was 5.25. So there was a 1% spread that the Federal Reserve was making. Well, then in August 17th, that's when they said, okay, well, let's cut the spread to half a percent or 50 basis points in financial geek talk. And so that was really the first opening salvo. And then you've got a month later, September 18th, 2007, they lowered rates 50 basis points to 4.75%. Then all of a sudden, you know, the next month they meet, they lower it to 4.5. Then December 11th, so we got a month and a half later, they lower another 25 basis points. And then you've got a month later, they lower it a full, actually 75 basis points. And as all this was going on, I was taking a class on the Federal Reserve, basically at the height of all this craziness where we were told that none of this stuff could ever happen. So just imagine, you know, someone that's into finance, and here I am graduating into the basically worst economy in the, you know, pretty much ever, certainly in my lifetime. But then, you know, you keep going. You've got, you know, March 16th, 2008. That's when Bear Stearns started melting down. And then they cut the spread down to 25 basis points. So the banks, so the Fed Reserve lended out at 3.25.
Okay, now wait a minute. Keep in mind, this is March of 08. The crash didn't happen until September, October of 08.
And September 15th.
So then I remember I wrote my article on this. It was July of 08. And I go, the greatest depression, why we're all screwed, the greatest depression or something like that. And I remember Gerald
Salante
called and he says, hey, greatest depression, copyright Gerald. I go, yeah, try and force that one. Nice try, Gerald. You know, so what he had talked about was Dave Hodges had used that in something and, you know, quoted me, you know, from back in July, and he had done it later. So he was just, I'm going, seriously, you're going to try and, you know, copyright that. But so that didn't really work out for him. But the point was, is that I want to make sure that you guys understand this is March. This is building up to what a lot of us saw, and I certainly wrote about in July, and then by September, October, boom, it hit hard. So continue with your chronology here, but what you're looking at there in March of 08 is kind of where we are now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whether we're in March of 08 or August of 2007, I think it's a pretty immaterial difference, you know, to wherever you want to split those hairs. But then you go back, so then March 16th, 2018, the Fed lowers the discount window down to 25 basis points. 2 days later, they meet again and cut it by 75 basis points, wow. Which this is all due to Bear Stearns collapsing. So, you know, things start unraveling very quickly. And then a month after that, they cut it another 25 basis points. So now we're down to 2. And then we've got October 8th, 2008. That's when they lower it down to 1.5%. So now this is, you know, 2 weeks after the Lehman collapse, September 15th, 2008, which was also my first day on the job as a financial planner, which is, you know, how I remember that. And then October 29th, 2008, they lowered down from 1.5 down to 1. And then in December, they lowered all the way down to 0. And so then we had this entire lie that we could keep things going. And what I'm going to do now is pull up dot plots, but first I'm going to explain what dot plots are. So the dot plots are where the Federal Reserve governors, where they think, let me try to make this a little bit bigger here. The dot plots, of course, it shows up on a different screen here, so I just messed that up. But the dot plots is where the Federal Reserve governors think that the rates are going to be both by the end of the current year, the next year, the following year, and then in what they call the longer run, so which would be 3 years from now.
When
and
they make these longer run predictions, how often do they hold to that? Because these predictions, you know, move the market. So the predictions are market moving without them even intent on actually doing any of this stuff. How accurate are they in their predictions, what they actually do?
I mean, about as accurate as Helen Keller in a reading contest. I don't know. Actually, I do have the chronology of that as well, so we can see exactly where that was. So if you go back to 2012... mind you, and this is already 4 years after the rates went down to zero. They thought the Federal Reserve, this is from their own website, thought that by 2015 that we would have a Fed funds rates of 4.25%. And I remember saying back in 2011, getting in trouble for sending out a client email that was intercepted through my compliance, where I said the Fed's stuck in a rock and a hard place, and there's no way they can ever raise rates to these levels. And now, because of Donald Trump, and partly because of people like myself and Dr. Frank, who are pushing Donald Trump, that that we're able to get eight rates. So during Obama, the rates were raised one time, in I believe at the end of 2015, and that was only because the Fed had lied for so long and kept saying that they kept moving the goalposts.
It's because Peter Schiff kept screaming what you're saying, and they're never gonna. And then they did a little bit, but it wasn't even really in the area that it was just all BS, you know. So I'm seeing similarities. What's going on now? All of the psyop that's going on is setting us up for it to happen again, and it's going to happen a lot worse. We'll get more detailed analysis from Tim when we come back on this, continue this line of thought, because I want you guys to know it's not going to fix it. I mean, this isn't going to fix anything, is it? I didn't know they went to zero. I don't remember the zero. How long were they at? Pull that chart back up.
Just a second here. No, they were at zero for a very long time. They were at zero from December 16th, 2008, all the way to 2015.
Okay, what was that zero?
The Fed funds rate was 0.25 for 7 years.
What?
So what happened,
I was looking at treasuries and so on, so I kind of judged the 30-year at 2.0, you know, and it's been, you know, they play with that. Now, this is the exchange rate between what? The banks or the, you know, the window, what?
This is so some banks have, you know, too much money at the end of the day, and well, not in 2008, but traditionally what happened is some banks would have a little bit too much money over the reserve requirement, and other banks wouldn't have enough money. And so this was the overnight interbank lending rate that, you know, HSBC might lend to Bank of America overnight, so then that way they could hit whatever buffer requirement, and they'd have to pay a nominal amount of interest. Well, in 2008, when everything was collapsing, none of the banks wanted to borrow with each other because they were all screwed themselves. And so they all had to then go to the Fed, or most of them had to go to the Federal Reserve, what they call the discount window. But that was always generally seen as a last resort. Like, listen, this is the, you know, it's sort of like, you know, if you, you know, you move out of your parents' house, you say, big F you, I'm never coming back. And then the absolute worst thing you ever want to do is a year later with your tail between your legs, like, you know, begging your parents to go back into the basement or something. And so that was always a bad, bad thing of, and that, mind you, I was taking a class on the Federal Reserve in 2007, 2008. And this was seen as like, you know, you just don't go to the Federal Reserve discount window. Well, then after 2008, it was like it was a thing where like no big deal. Matter of fact, you've got to go to the discount window so that way everybody can get some blood in their hands with what the Fed's doing. Because if we have a bank that doesn't go to the Fed discount window, then it would make the other banks look relatively worse. And so it was this whole thing where, you know, they're all the criminals' blood's all washed together, so that way they're all sort of implicated in whatever goes on. But yeah, it no longer became taboo after 2008. So prior to 2008, it meant you were in a lot of trouble if you had to resort to that. And then after 2008, no one cared anymore. So, and then the other thing that happened was that they kept saying, and I don't have all this memorized, but I remember they were saying, okay, once the unemployment rate gets below 6%, we're gonna start raising rates. And it was, okay, once it gets above 5.5, and once it gets below 5, and once it gets below 4.5, and once it gets below 4. And so they just keep like moving the goalposts over and over and over again. And then, you know, and once this happens, we're going to start low. And so every single time they hit their target, they found another excuse not to raise rates because there was some other bad news. And the bad news was good news because the Fed lost the excuse to not raise rates. And I predicted this in that speech that I gave at your house when Adam, I was like the warm up act from Adam Kokesh and Dr. Frank, where it was called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News, for basically saying that Trump would do things that were a lot better than what Hillary would do, and then that optimism would then lead to the Fed not having the excuse not to cut rates anymore. And then also the very first podcast I ever made was on the subject of the Federal Reserve and Trump and how basically Jesus couldn't stop what is happening. I don't care who's elected. I don't care if Ron Paul's elected. There's no turning this around. And so it's sort of like we're a patient where – you know, all of our limbs have been cut off and we're bleeding out of every orifice, and we have an 800-pound gorilla on us with a sledgehammer to our face, and now we got
there. Right, here we go.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, this is the show must go on, and that's what's happening here. We're just getting a show, a really big show. Now, I want to make sure that we're not confusing things. This is what I do. I saw there was a correlation between the 30-year Treasury percent and what paying out and what kind of happens. There's kind of a delayed reaction of, you know, and I remember at one time, it was in the first couple of years of the Reagan administration, interest rates were 15.5% or something. It was ridiculous. So people would give money. Now, the Fed rate that they keep talking about, the interest rate, that's not anywhere in the same thing. I want to make sure that we get this on it because I get things confused. We have the Treasury rate, which is the cost of borrowing money from the people. People will give us money. Say, oh, we're investing 30 years in America economic. Woohoo! You know what I mean? Yeah, sometimes a better idea than others. But what we're talking about, the Fed rate here now, this is the rate at which banks borrow between themselves overnight, because there is a reserve that they have to have in cash, you know, to keep a running. It used to be 20%. Now it's like, I don't know, less than 1%. But whatever it is, they have to have, you know, this amount of money on hand, and then they balance it. You know, they're supposed to be kind of what's in and out and so on. Well, at the end of the evening, they'll go and balance between themselves, and they got some kind of, that's LIBOR or something, right? The cost of money between them. But then the Fed rate is if you go to the Fed, well, we're going to need to borrow money or get money to balance out and meet our requirements of how, something like that. How far off am I? Explain this, what we're talking about right here, and what it's used for.
Well, LIBOR is a slightly separate beast, but the Federal Reserve
rate. Well, that's like between the banks before they get to the Federal Reserve window or something, right?
That's a whole nother can of worms.
All right, forget everything LIBOR. I just said.
Well, basically replace LIBOR with what you said with the Fed discount. So the Fed discount window is the, you know, going back. So the only rate that the Fed sets is the overnight interbank lending rate is all they really set. However, that has a gigantic influence on everything else because of the perception on what it means. And so when what happened is in 2008, all the banks, all the liquidity dried up and no one had the extra money. The money they had to hold on to because they had so many impending obligation and liabilities to meet. So all the liquidity dried up. And so then the banks had to then start going to the discount window, and which used to be taboo, a thing that nobody would ever want to do. And all of a sudden now it came to the point where it was no longer taboo and everybody was doing it. And that rate stayed at zero for 7 years. And so if you go back to 2012, they were saying, and I could pull up that chart again, but they were saying that by 2015 that the rate would already be at 4.5%, and I was claiming that was all BS. Now, they kept moving the goalpost on us and saying, okay, once the unemployment gets below 6, we're going to raise it. Okay, once it gets below 5.5, once it gets below 5, once it gets, and so they kept moving the goalpost, finding another reason not to raise rates. But then when Trump got in there, he kept talking about how great everything was and how it was the greatest economy ever, and then the stock market is booming, and the perception of how things were going basically created this whole, especially what happened with the tax cuts that were going on, is that the tax cuts mainly went to the biggest, you know, Fortune 500 type companies, which then used that money to buy back their own stock. So now they had less stock outstanding, which increased their earnings per share, which then artificially made everything seem a lot better than what it really was. And it also allowed companies to repatriate their money, which then allowed them to buy back more stock. And so it created this whole artificial reality that is, you know, temporary. It's not something that can go on forever. I mean, George W. Bush did the same thing if things were going great in 2005 or 6 when he implemented that. But obviously, you know, you fast forward a couple of years. But the very first podcast I ever made, the first official one, was on how, you know, basically don't go around taking victory laps right now, because just because Trump won, you know, that's only, you know, a tiny bit of the puzzle. And it doesn't matter who wins. There's no way of stopping what is eventually coming. Now, it can be delayed. And I thought the worst thing that could happen was to try to delay it. And now, you know, the quote-unquote free market is going to end up getting the blame for what's going on, because it's like, you know, with Obama, it's like we've got someone where every orifice was chopped off. We're bleeding out of our arms, bleeding out of our legs. We've got an 800-pound gorilla on us with a sledgehammer. And now we avoided Hillary Clinton. So maybe now we don't have an 800-pound gorilla with a sledgehammer, speeding up the rate of blood flowing out. And now we've got a couple bandages, and now the, you know, Republicans are up there talking about how great how they've saved everything. But meanwhile, we're still bleeding out, and they're arguing about, you know, whether they want a red Band-Aid or a blue Band-Aid. And I'm saying that there's no way to ever put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And all this is doing is, you know, mortgaging our children and grandchildren's future, because, I mean, right now, our greatest economy ever, and we're probably going to have a $1.2 trillion deficit this year. I mean, if we can't get things under all this expansion in GDP, which the GDP is not actually that much different than what it was the last 4 years under Obama. You take a look at the chart, it's not like, oh my God, like what happened in 2017 that everything is going amazing. And the stock market is barely higher now than it was in January of 2018. I mean, so, you know, everyone wanted, I mean, I don't have the exact numbers, but I bet the average percent gain on the stock market is probably less underneath Trump than it was under Obama. I'd also willing to say that the average, unemployment rate going down was probably going down faster underneath Obama too. And I wrote a whole book to dispel all the crap that Obama was doing. So everybody knows that I'm not some leftist over here trying to cover for the Democrats, but be careful what you wish for. And be careful what your measuring stick is, because if the Democrats have a better measuring stick based on all these fake numbers, then be careful what you wish for. And I would still say that I didn't watch the debate last night, but I would still say there's probably at least a 50-50 shot the Democrats take over, despite how crazy all their candidates are. And now the one good thing that Trump has going for him is that I don't know if I could do a better job, you know, going in there as a sleeper cell candidate to mess things up than the Democrats are doing to themselves. However, you know, I think, yeah, for a bunch of reasons that I've said on your show a million times before, I think there's a lot better chance of Democrats winning than what people want to. It's at least a coin flip. And you and I first came on your show talking about how I thought Donald Trump had a much better shot at winning than people would give him credit for. And everyone laughed at me for that, and especially most libertarians. And now, now almost all those people think that there's 0% chance of him losing. And what have we done? We've made America great again by the time Trump gets out of there, the deficit will have gone from about $666 billion underneath Trump, underneath Obama's last year. And now it's probably going to be 100% higher than that. And so, and then all these Tea Party people are out there, you know, that's basically dead. Peter Schiff had an episode on that recently. And, you know, and so what are we going to do? Oh, we got to elect Republicans to make the government smaller again. And that alone, if you only piss off a tiny, tiny percent of the Tea Party type people, libertarian minded people out there, they might just stay home. And today, I think, is that opening salvo of the first time the Fed had to cut rates on the backs of all this. You know, we're cutting rates when the stock market is at an all-time high. I mean, it's absolute craziness. And most of the time, the Fed funds rate goes up, you know, like 16, 19 times before they have to start cutting. This went up 8 times. The only reason it went up is because we were in this artificially stock market induced economy that was predicated on companies borrowing money, repatriation, buying back shares, everything I've just mentioned. And today is going to be that opening elbow that almost no one saw coming except for me back in December, because I knew, and I saw what happened in October coming too, because I knew there's no way that all these things could coalesce at once through October through December, meaning supposedly the ECB was going to stop their money printing program. They've had to reverse course on that. The Federal Reserve was going to be selling $50 billion a month in bonds. They've already announced that program is going to stop at the end of the year. They also announced in October that's when we were on autopilot. I called BS in that way ahead of time. And so, and I'm sure there's a few other factors such as the deficit and getting into a trade war with China when we're relying on China to buy our debt. We're also relying on the Federal Reserve to buy our debt. And now they were going to be the biggest sellers. I knew that all this stuff coming together, there was no chance of this happening. And the only thing I really got wrong is I should have sold my client put options at the end of December is probably the only really thing that if I could have played it better. But, you know, you can't.
Can't win on all cylinders all the time, you know. During the break, I'm going to get a class in which interest rates do what and how, and then I'll come back and summarize it in 30 seconds. Guaranteed.
I'll take the over.
There are basically two types of average.
I'm sorry, what?
I said I'll take the over bet that you can't do it in 30 seconds.
I bet I freaking can. All right, let me do it here, because I need to understand. I want to get detail when I say this to the audience. There's a lot of audience that go, Ernie, you know what the hell you're talking about. So I'm going, all right. So the LIBOR scandal was them manipulating the interest rates on borrowing between banks overnight. Yes or no? You there?
Yeah, if I'm back, I'm not sure what happened.
Okay. LIBOR is what? It is a rate between banks balancing their reserves or whatever between each other and overnight, right? How far off am I?
It's sort of like the international version of the Fed funds rate, I guess, would probably be a better way of. So the Fed is.
But the money comes from where?
And actually, I think LIBOR is actually going away soon, or may have already gone away. I think they're trying to do away with it, but it's the London interbank offer rate. So it has to do with all the more international rates of lending money back and forth.
Okay, so London international bank to bank rate.
And it's actually negative right now.
And what's it at? Negative what?
Negative 0.47. And you can actually borrow for overnight, and you can actually borrow money for an entire year at negative 0.33. They have Euro LIBOR, US dollar LIBOR. Let's see here.
Okay, now the scandal was them fixing this rate. Who was fixing it? To whose benefit and why?
Now, I think there was a few different ways that they could fix it, but let's say you're Deutsche Bank or singling them out or any one of these banks.
No, Deutsche Bank has got its own issues. They were going to come up, you know, directly too.
Yeah.
Bitcoin just broke 10,000 again.
All right, very nice. BitcoinEarlyAdopter.com for all you listeners out there. Okay, so what we've got going on right now with LIBOR is, what was your question again about LIBOR?
No, what is it? I mean, who set – this is the point. There was a scandal last year or two ago that came out that LIBOR was being fixed by somebody for something to benefit what? And I'm going, all right, so they're finagling interest rates for the big banks. I'm so shocked. I mean, you know, I'm supposed to do what with that information? Well, one, I need to understand what all these different interest rates are about. So when you do the Fed rate – that's their window that they weren't even using before. It was not even really a tool before because it would make a bank look bad and it would have an impact on their viability and what their stock prices are and all that kind of stuff. So they didn't do it. So now, just like with the TARP, they go in, everybody's got to do it. Everybody's got to do it. Your brains or your signature on this document, you know, Paulson thing. Well, why? So that they all looked the same or something. So when you talk about the Fed interest rate, what impact does that have on the economy. I can see to where you got LIBOR, you got overnight 0.47, 0.33 if you want to borrow it a year, you know, so it's cheaper to borrow money. See, I don't understand what they're trying to do. It's just they're pushing on strings. They just keep dumping money in and thinking it's going to cure it. And I need to understand how the interest rate from the Fed, who gives a crap? How is this having an impact? Where?
Well, sort of like, I guess.
All right, we're coming back. Let's answer it on.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
All right, here we go. You ready? Morning, feeling! Yeah! That was a good one. All right, I need some actual factual information. This is Feely, you know, I got the feels thing. I need to know, you know, these interest rates, what they do. Now, a year or two ago, it was a big scandal, LIBOR, which comes out of London, which is the
2012.
God, was that long ago?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, do they even still have it? Is it around? Are they using it? It was just the interest rates overnight between banks to be able to meet their requirements of something, and there was some scandal of fixing these rates to benefit somebody for something that has nothing to do with me. Well, it trickles down to us, but I, you know, and then you get the overnight rate is set at 0.47, and then if you borrow it for a year, it's 0.33.
Negative.
Negative 0.47?
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's if you're borrowing in euro. So they have a diff. So they have different rates for the euro, the yen, U.S. dollar. But the big
Time out, man. It's not just glaze over this. LIBOR. I'm saying, give me money. And it's a negative interest rate, which means if I hold it long enough, God forbid I hold it a year at 0.33, I'm paying it back less than what I borrowed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and it's craziness.
Who the hell sets this? Who is LIBOR? Who are these guys?
All right, and this is where the scandal. So I actually have some information pulled up on the screen right now. So you can see what the rates are, both from the euro, U.S. dollar obviously is a lot more. Some reason my internet's going slow. Sorry, we got 2.347 is the overnight rate in America right now. We got the Great Britain pound is coming in at 0.67 overnight. Japanese yen coming in at negative 0.1.
Yeah, you got to say these negatives. When you say point something, you got to throw negative. That negative in there.
Yeah, I mean, basically America and Great Britain are the only two positives. And then the CHF, I actually forgot what that one is, but that's also negative, but with the big reason why LIBOR is important is because LIBOR is a rate that basically you have $350 trillion of derivatives are tied to LIBOR. So the LIBOR rate affects everything from your credit card. Look at your credit card statement. It says it's going to be 17 points plus LIBOR or your mortgage. Everything is something plus LIBOR. And how they get the LIBOR rate is it's almost based upon more like a good old boys network where the banks will call each other up and say, you know, or the call to this, you know, I don't even really know what it is, but they call up the LIBOR consortium and say, hey, you know, these are the rates that we're charging right now to lend overnight to this bank. Or these are our average rates.
So wait. You're saying they got this, is it a governmental agency? Is it regulated in some way? Or is it just, you know, Fred and friends? I mean, who are we talking about here?
So it's currently administered by the Intercontinental Exchange. They've been running it since January 2014.
Okay, so it's they, them, those, and has nothing to do.
So they also control the New York Stock Exchange.
All right, they, them, those. All right,
they're also the ones coming out with the BACT, B-A-K-K-T, crypto exchange as well. But what they do is, so I'm reading now from LIBOR scandal Wikipedia page. The banks are supposed to submit the actual interest rates they are paying or would expect to pay for borrowing money from other banks. The LIBOR is supposed to be the total assessment of the health of the financial system. And so what was happening is, I mean, if you go back down to, I'm trying to find where I was before, but each of these banks have massive amounts of derivatives. So back in 2009, Citigroup had interest rate swaps. These are just interest rate swaps of $14.2 trillion, just Citigroup. Bank of America interest rate swaps of $49.7 trillion. JP Morgan had almost $50 trillion. And so what would happen is, let's say you have a derivative that's
trillion. These are derivatives?
With a T, yes. All right. They're just interest rate derivatives. That's a whole bunch of other kinds. So imagine you have a gigantic, imagine you've got a $5 trillion derivative position that's about to expire and you're about to lose your ass on it. What you can do is say you call up your friend, I think it was Barclays Bank. So you got the Barclays trader that calls up Deutsche or HSBC or any one of these other banks and says, hey, man, can you really help me out? And just say that instead of having the rate coming in at 2.1, I really need this rate to come in at 1.99. So can you just say that you're the rate was at 1.98, and so they were basically fixing this so that way for that one day they would really help out that one bank that needed to offload their derivatives, and then the other banks were saying, you know, sort of like a scratching each other's back type deal, basically, you know.
So they're doing a round robin who gets to unload.
Yeah, and so that's complete colluding, very illegal what was going on. And I think they busted one guy for that, is like all that ended up happening. And they were using different messaging apps to do this. So they needed your friends, which I'm pretty sure I know which friend you're talking about, pirate communication app, because that's how they got caught was they whatever communication they were using was not pirate communications, and they probably rolled up some low-level guy, and I'm sure someone paid a small fine, and that's about it. And now you never hear about it. So, but at the end of the day, it's all market distortion, all this stuff.
Okay, now what I want the audience to understand, and I want to understand, is that when you're talking derivatives to the tune of gazillions of trillions of dollars, any micro percent going any which direction of anything is somebody's making a bunch of money, you know, somewhere.
Or losing a bunch of money.
Well, a lot of times, you know, they're selling short on a lot of stuff. They make money on people losing money. They don't care. They just want volatility. But the derivatives, this is something when, you know, we got Buffett and these guys going, weapons of mass destruction, you know, derivative thing. And it was Bill Bonner and Addison Wiggins wrote a book, Empire of Debt. And this was like 05, 06 or something. We saw this coming back then. Interviewed Addison and Bill and, you know, exchanges with them and so on. And they were like, look, you have no idea. This derivative thing is something people have no idea. And they were talking like $70 trillion back then. That's piddly money. It is way more, hundreds of trillions of dollars. And when these things go, when there's a little, because it's on your credit card, I remember this happened last time, it's connected to life. Okay, now you got, all of a sudden, your minimum payment just shot up on your credit cards. Or they're even coming and saying, you see this totally agreed line right here? We can call in the whole debt, even on your mortgage, on your homes, on these different loans. We're calling the loan. What is that about? Where does that come in? They said, yep, you just owe us, and then we're foreclosing because you didn't do it, because then they're totally, I agree, minutia, the copy says we get to take everything and we call in the debt. What is that?
Well, I mean, a lot of what was happening in 2008 is that people, you know, especially in my neighborhood, is about as, you know, ground zero for it, because I've got houses across the street from me that are still going for $100,000 less than what people bought them in 2006 for. So, but, you know, what was going on is, you know, you bought a house for $500,000 and now it's worth $220,000 and you only had, you know, maybe $10,000 of skin in the game. People are just like, well, screw it. You know, I've only got a tiny bit of skin in the game. You know, maybe now I lost my job and now I can't, I've got to short sell my home or foreclose in the home. And so that what was going on is that all these people bit off way more than they can chew. But it would have been way cheaper to just basically give everybody a free house than it would be to do, you know, all the crap that ended up basically just propping up this whole zombie banking system. And that's what it is. There's two different branches of economics.
I need that understood. The banking, that they call in a debt. There's some provision in these that they can say, hey, you owe all of it now.
Well, it's called usually for the debt. Usually it works the other way around when you're borrowing, when you're the bond holder. So let's say you are paying, you have a bond, you're holding onto a 10-year bond. It's paying you 5%, and now rates are slashed. And now now that corporation can go out and buy, get one for 2%. They would call it in and say, okay, now we're buying back the $100,000. You know, we lent from you because now we can get a better rate. So usually that's how it works in that regard.
Wait, time out. All right. So I had a 30-year treasury that was paying, you know, 15% back in the early 80s or something, not a Chinese. And I said, ooh, I love buying them 30 years at that interest rate. I'll do that all day long. Then all of a sudden it gets to where, yeah, I can get this refinanced at, you know, none percent, 3% or something. And there's a provision in there. They go, yep, and we're buying. You don't get your 15% anymore. We're taking it and starting over and paid you off and your principal, and we're reissuing the debt at lower. They can do that?
For some reason, my internet froze for 90% of that rant. But what I think, what essentially, it doesn't happen on the government bond side of things, but some corporate bonds are callable. And those bonds, all things considered, would deem a higher amount of interest going to you because you take on the risk of not being able to hold it out to the full duration of what you want. So I don't think that happens for government bonds, such as the U.S. debt. But if, you know, Ford Motor Company wanted to have a callable bond, maybe they would pay 7%, whereas if it didn't have a callable, maybe they might only pay
6%. So are some of these bonds and things that they can be callable, they part of retirement programs?
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably a lot of people that have callable bonds, especially municipal bonds, inside of their...
Whoa, time freaking out. This is not, you know, that's what they were talking about. Well, they're going to do that again. You know, this is not going well. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about this. I need to understand this. Go to the live stream, and so if I can't explain it to you, then I don't know it.
Don't you hate that feeling in the pit of your stomach?
Yeah, because that's one thing. If I can't explain it, I need to have a clear understanding here. There are interest rates that are set by several different levels. There are governmental ones, which is the Fed rate kind of. See, that's not even government. It's like talking about LIBORs. Like, they're some government thing. They're not government. None of this is government. You know, it's private with the protection of government when they need it to be government. You know, that's one thing. It's like with the, you know, Facebook. Well, it's a private company. No, it's not. You know, so they're going to have rule you surveillance crypto of whatever the hell, and it's going to be set by all kinds of regulations of government. I guarantee that, and certainly data is going to go there. So I'm trying to parse this out, because what happened in 08 is going to happen again on steroids. When it happens, all of you going, woohoo, I'm glad I got this high interest rate of not negative, and I'm going to ride this out, and I'll get, nope. They're going to call in the debt, especially if it's a bond that they have that. Did you read the fine print? This is what happened to Gerald Celente. Gerald Celente, MF Global, he goes, yeah, I got a good deal on some gold. I went ahead. I'm going to take delivery. You know, I'll buy the options on that, and I want it. Okay, give me. And they go, nah, it's gone. You know, we already spent that money. Whoa, what? A little fine print. It says that rehypothecation, which means that the bank can use your deposits as their principal or collateral investment on something. I think it was Greek bonds or something, and the ECB didn't bail them out in time. So it was gone. It just lost. Well, they took all the hundreds of thousands. I mean, it was a chunk of money of Celente that he put in there so he could get a good deal on buying options on gold he wanted to take delivery on. They go, and it's gone. We're so sorry. And he goes, what? You got? Hey, man, you totally agreed right here in this here line that says we can take it. And they did.
Hey, man,
Jamie Dimon.
So, hey, man, you shouldn't spend so much time trying to, you know, copyright Ernest Hancock, you know, Greater Depression, and spend more time reading your own paperwork.
This was, unfortunately, we had already done it way before he was going to try, whatever, you know, it's just Gerald, you know, but yeah, get Gerald on again, Don. It's time to talk to him because he's going to be doing some predicting and here comes something, you know, here we go. Well, so now I have the LIBOR and the Fed. We got to stop thinking of the Fed as government. It's not. They just do whatever the hell they want to do because they want to do it. And if he didn't do what the president says, I guess he picked somebody else to do it or something, but they're going to do whatever they're going to do. So what are the other interest rates that have impact? Because when you go with LIBOR or these other stuff impact what I got to pay off, what they're going to call, and it's part of my credit card payment, you know, I don't see that going well. So where is the big dial on the economy is the federal interest rate? I mean, that's it of their overnight thing? That's what they're talking about? What are they talking about?
Well, it's all so manipulated right now that it almost doesn't even matter. Probably the biggest interest rate that people follow would be the 10-year U.S. bond. So when people talk about countries' interest rates, a lot of times they're either referring to that or they're referring to the Fed funds rate, which really the Fed funds rate.
What's Fed funds rate? See, you got
that, that's that's only the going, you know, the rate that the banks charged to lend money to each other overnight. However, things are distorted because when you have the Federal Reserve and other central banks buying up their own bonds, there's not a true market signal of where the price of interest should be because they're distorting it by buying up their own bonds. And so you're not having a true market actually.
So what is that? They're just printing money and giving it to the government? I mean, when they buy up their own bonds, they're buying up debt of, you know, grandbabies, you know, and they're spending it on missiles or something, right? I mean, what are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, not too far off, but I did have some other, because I actually got an appointment that I got to prep for in a little bit. So
a quickie here and then we'll call it.
Yeah, so what we're looking at now is they've got a chart that's showing different central bank assets. So it's European Central Bank, Bank of Japan, Federal Reserve. And you'll see that, you know, right around the time that the Fed stopped printing money, right around here is so late 2014. Then you also see that's right around the time that the Bank of Japan massively ramped up their program, also the time the Europeans massively ramped up their program. And then you'll see that basically central bank assets purchases sort of, you know, stalled out or peaked in late 2017. And then right now are just barely on the uptick now. But what I also want to show, and this is, I think, one of the most important graphs on here, is that this shows total assets of central banks. And what you'll see is that in late 2018, it went from, you know, central banks accumulating more assets to that was the first time that they started decreasing assets off their balance sheet. Also perfectly coincides with when the stock market started going down last October. So I don't think there's any coincidence in that. And then what you've seen now is that it's starting to get back up to zero in terms of kind of maintaining status quo.
Okay, now wait. Now you're not talking about total assets. You're talking about adding or deleting from their balance sheet these assets that they shouldn't have had to begin with. If I see them selling them off, I'm like, good, sell them all off, then we'll find out what the market is. They start to do that, the market goes down. Whoa, we got to start buying crap again.
Yes, and so here, so I'm trying to find another chart where it showed, because I got a million charts here. So right here you see this figure eight where it shows U.S. Treasury debt, so the Fed's assets. And so with the Fed Reserve up until October was saying that basically this number was going to get close to zero and they were just going to sell all the assets off their balance sheet. Well, guess what? They'll be lucky if they get it down to $3 trillion and then that's going to be it. I mean, it's only going to go down a tiny bit more. And then I believe at the end of the year, it's going to stop.
Okay, $3 trillion total assets or $3 trillion a month or $3 trillion more? Or what are you talking about?
Total. So, I mean, they got it up to four and now it's at about 3.5. And so they said they're going to get back down to zero. I've seen some Fed people talk about getting it down to one. Well, now that conversation is out the window now. Like no one even thinks that's going to happen. I mean, I was saying that this wasn't going to happen, you know, before they even started doing it, that there was no way that they could actually get it back down to zero. And so the Fed's liabilities, barely went down, went down just a tiny, tiny bit. And a lot of what they also did is when they were buying back their own bonds, they were shortening the maturity. So instead of having maybe a 5-year bond, they would buy a 2-year bond, which now puts
the now they got to roll over.
It because we get to borrow at a cheaper rate, but it also puts us in a more precarious spot because now we're a lot more interest rate sensitive to what's going on. And when Trump was running, him and Mnuchin said, you know, Obama's an idiot. You know, we should be locking in rates for 100 years. You know, we need to take advantage of this. And I was saying at the time, and I mentioned it in my Trump Effect presentation, that there's no way they could do that because nobody would lend money to us for 100 years. And the rate of interest would be so much higher, even if it is very, very low, even if it was at 4%, that would balloon the interest payments so much that it would bankrupt us immediately. And apparently I'm the only person with a freaking calculator or any brains that understands that there's no way this could possibly be done, but yet somehow everyone still holds on to every word.
Okay, let me try and, you know, from my impression, correct me where I'm wrong here. It seems to me that to keep this, whatever the hell, the Ponzi scheme going.
House of cards.
The Federal Reserve bought up, this is part of the TARP thing, when the banks took all these bad loans and they had, man, they're not performing. Nobody's buying these. Nobody's, you know, they can't service the debt. They're not making their house payments or whatever. And all this stuff just went to crap. Well, the Federal Reserve took all that and they said, we'll give you a dollar for dollar. You don't have that debt anymore. You're good. Don't worry about it. You're all good. We have it now. So then they're going, all right, well, we need to keep buying more debt and more debt and more debt. And they, you know, start buying, and they buy their own bonds that they created, that they're borrowing or lending all this money that we got to owe generationally into the U.S. spending of the whatever the hell they're spending it on, war and welfare and whatever, entitlements and so on. So when they do that, they got this big giant bubble of stuff that they got. They need to get rid of it. They aren't supposed to do that. They were never supposed to. They keep saying they don't do that. They're doing it on steroids. So now they're going, we need to start, instead of buying stuff, we need to sell stuff. We need to clear our balance sheet of this. They can't, because when they start doing that, all of a sudden the economy starts to go to crap. There's not enough money on the planet for people to even buy it. It starts doing fire sales. It goes down, blah, blah, blah. Freaking out, we'll buy a little bit back. How far off am I?
Yeah, right, spot on.
Okay, so this is what's going. So when you look at, what if the central bank sold all the assets that they accumulated to keep this thing going? The entire economics of the world would crash. You know, it'd be a total reset. It's all this bankruptcy and malinvestment flushed out of the system of what everybody keeps screaming has to happen, gonna happen, should happen. And when it does, it's going to be no backstop. There's not going to be any fixer. And especially if the United States dollar is not the reserve currency of the world anymore.
J.P. Morgan had an article the other day and came out and said that the U.S. dollar might not always be the reserve currency. I mean, what's J.P. Morgan coming out and saying that? I mean, that's pretty weird.
Might not be. Might. Maybe. You know, there's a possibility on the horizon up. Well, here it goes.
Well, no, Donald Trump tweeted out 2 weeks ago that the dollar will always be the strongest and always be the best. And so, I mean, me as a financial
Never
advisor.
Never and always. I love those.
Like, I'm not allowed to say that as a financial advisor. I would get, you know, sued or get, you know, reprimanded or even have my licenses taken away. But if you're the president, you can say it. It doesn't matter, you know. So you got to love.
Manipulator. He's got to go sit in the timeout bench with Elon Musk.
Yeah, and he's saying that we need to go and basically and match China one for one for when they devalue, we've got to devalue too. And it's just, I know there's no way out of this situation. We can keep, and it's just amazing how all the Republicans.
Can they hold it till the next election cycle? Can they go through 2020 November?
Well, they held it this long, and I would have said that they wouldn't have been able to hold it on this.
They
long,
yank
so.
Crap out of their butt, man. It's just amazing.
Well, I wouldn't want to marry my entire political life to whether or not they could. And all that really matters is the 2 months before an election, there's an 86% chance the incumbent will win if the stock market is positive 2 months prior to an election. And so all this, what's going on right now, it's all, what have you done for me lately? So it doesn't matter what's going on now. If, you know, next year at this time, everything starts going to shit.
Well, you know, I see the other guys, left, Democrat, whatever, you know, what they're doing is they're going, it's so great. See, it's great. You think it's so great. Well, we need to spend that money on the new program of great and make America great with, we got more entitlement of welfare. Great. And I'm going, yeah, well, no matter what happens, I think people are going to see that's not going to work. I, you know, universal basic, something that I don't know. I mean, it's, what do you think the education of the American public, what are they going to see? Is it going to be in inflation and prices? Is it groceries? Is it gas? Because gas is down, man. It's 270 something, you know, a gallon. I was going up to Vegas. It was 260 something. I'm like, what the heck? So, so what do we think is going to happen to prices?
Well, unfortunately, the average person does not have the education to understand the cause of the higher prices, and they just want to attack the symptom. And the symptom is we need to have fight for $15 an hour minimum wage because the price of living is going up. So I think that one of the most important things that, you know, we as libertarians or anarchists could do to reach out to other people is let them know what the true cause of their basically despondency is. And so, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that, but the true cause is because when the people that get the money the first when it's printed are the big banks. The big banks get it for zero. If you and I want to go borrow money to start a business right now, we get it for, you know, 17 to 25%. And so, you know, it's the richest people in the world get the money first. But then when you print a whole bunch of extra money, then that money then is going to then cause other asset prices to rise, because it's like if you're playing Monopoly and everybody starts, I don't know what you start off with, like $1,000. And now let's say, okay, we're going to give everybody $3,000. And now you can say, hey, you know, I'm willing to take that park place that normally costs $500 and I'll go bid you $900 for it because I just got all this extra money and all the assets are being, taken up. But meanwhile, the Democrats think, okay, well, instead of, you know, fixing the system, we're just going to make every other spot one of those, you know, pay $100 in taxes on the monopoly board, as opposed to saying, hey, you know, what we need to do is, you know, get away from the Communist Manifesto, which a central bank is part of the Communist Manifesto. We need, the biggest thing is we need to get rid of debt-based fiat money. And you don't even have to, you know, you could still have fiat money. You could still have a currency. It just can't be backed by debt. And so it's the fact that it's backed by debt is creating this drag that can never be paid back ever from day one. If the first dollar that was created December 23rd, 1913 had 4% interest on it, the end of year one, you owe $1.04, but you only created $1, so you're in the hole. That's mathematically impossible to get out of from day one, and that's not even counting fractional reserve banking, not even counting derivatives, not even counting all the crap that's going on. So the biggest thing that we can do from an education standpoint is let people know that this system is not against left, right. It's not against white and black. It's not against, you know, all these other boxes they want to pin us in. It's about the fact that you've got people that can borrow money for nothing or not actually get paid to borrow money in many places around the world. But then the people are the ones who are getting screwed because, you know, Bank of America gets to borrow money at basically nothing for 7 years. They get to go buy up all these assets for nothing. And then they turn around and flip it over to us for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10, 15, 25% interest. And that's why Thomas Jefferson said, if you ever allow a private central bank to issue the currency and credit, we're all going to end up homeless on the continent or forefathers conquered or something like that. And so it's just a slow, I can't believe it's lasted as long as it's lasted. I'm really sort of in shock. But the problem is this solution is not going to be the answer. The answer is going to be, I mean, there's one page that I've been trolling quite a bit on Facebook. It's called Patriotic Millionaires. And the whole thing is about how, you know, we need to basically have government manage everything. It's a big time leftist page, and it's all about how, you know, these millionaires want to raise taxes and taxes should be raised. Well, the millionaires and billionaires want to raise taxes because they already have their money and all the tax-free stuff that I'm helping people set up for the Bitcoin millionaires. And they want your taxes raised because the tax money gets paid to them when everything gets bailed out. So the richest people want higher taxes like Warren Buffett because it limits competition to ever get up to that level. And then also, when who was the biggest recipient of bailout funds in 2008? It was all the companies Warren Buffett owned. He was, you know, one of the richest men in the world, and he got a lot of the TARP bailout. And then there was the secret bailout that was actually the $16 trillion bailout that Mark Pittman uncovered, and then he mysteriously died right after that FOIA request, where it was, and then we gave, like, it was a ridiculous amount to Gaddafi Central Bank, and we went in and killed him because, you know, he was creating this old African-based currency. We gave money to the, it was this whole rob Peter to pay Paul. It was America's turn to do all the easing for 7 years. The second we stopped our easing, and right now what I'll go to is a sheet where it shows the assets of the European Central Bank and Bank of Japan. So if you see right here in this QE line, so as soon as the Federal Reserve stops printing money is as soon as the Europeans and Bank of Japan start printing money, because what we needed was, it was sort of like a hot potato where America had the potato for 7 years, and then the potato got thrown to the ECB and Bank of Japan, and now they're at the end of their rope, so now they're throwing the potato back to us, and so now we're going to have to start lowering rates, because if every other place, you know, in the world is borrowing money at negative 0.4 and America is 2.3, it's creating a flood of money into America, American bonds, which is temporarily making things, you know, really good here on a relative basis, but it's creating other imbalances in the rest of the world because we're not in a vacuum. And eventually, whether this starts, and because of how things are shaking out, the blow up could happen overseas and then come over here. But the reason it blew up overseas first was because the Federal Reserve distorted interest rates and sucked in all the money over here temporarily. So temporarily, the dollar could get a lot stronger in this crack up boom. But ultimately, the answer, in air quotes, will be to print more money. And ultimately, I think that this will be a good scenario for gold, good scenario for Bitcoin, and why I'm helping in other alternative assets, which is why, you know, we're helping strategize for people and how they can get these assets into their IRAs and 401ks to help protect themselves a little bit. But more importantly, having a plan so that way, you know, we're not caught flat-footed when this happens. Because, you know, when you're 10 years out from the last crash, you'll be amazed at how many people have already forgot, how many people think it can never happen, how many people think that this is only the beginning and we're going to have another 10 years of strong, robust growth, when I think that right now we're at the end of the ropes, and it's only a matter of time when bad news will be bad news again. We're already in an earnings recession right now, I believe, where the most of the companies that have reported earnings. Somewhere, I think I had this pulled up the other day. Let me see if I can find it real quick. If I have it, I might not have it, but I believe like the average company right now, like earnings went down 2%. And so the earnings were going down, but yet the stock market like soared. And so it's just really sort of befuddling. Actually, here we go, right? You know, I found it.
Okay, go ahead and organize your thoughts on that, because I want to make this point. When Trump reduced the taxes on a lot, what he was saying is there's gazillions of dollars out there around the world that these corporations are putting somewhere else other than the United States because it's cheaper. If you reduce taxes on certain things, then they can it be to their advantage to repatriate that money here in America. But the first thing that they did is you got the guys with their golden parachutes and their salary tied to the price of, and what's the first thing they do? They take this savings, they take this money from overseas, and they buy their own stock. Now, I always thought that wasn't necessarily bad. You know, they got confidence, they're buying their own stock. Okay, fine, buy your own stock. You can sell it back and make a profit later, or kind of, you know, peace out, I don't care. You know, but what happens is all of a sudden they start buying their own stock. The price of the stock goes up. They get a big giant whatever. Now they don't have that money to do R&D or to build the business or do what they were doing. They're playing finance. They're not a manufacturing company anymore. They're a stockbroker with their own stock, you know? So I can see how that shot the stock market up a significant part of that. I don't know how much of where it's at now has to do with that. But when you bring in gazillions, I don't know, is it trillions of dollars? It's a lot that came into the country so that these companies could start buying their own stock. So that had something to do with it too, right?
Oh, that had a big reason to do with it, because when you have less stock, let's say you're making $1 million and you've got 1 million shares outstanding, you know, the earnings per share is $1. Now, let's say you buy back 100,000 of your shares and you're still earning $1 million, and now you've got 900,000 shares. Well, now your earnings per share increased by 10%. So now it's $1.10. And so what was going on is the companies are earning just a tiny bit more money or about the same or even negative, but now there's less shares outstanding, so it increased the earnings per share. However, right now, and of course I've actually got off that screen, but what we're seeing right now is that the first quarter of the year, the earnings per share decreased by 0.3%. Now for the second quarter of the year, 264 out of the 500, I don't know why there's 505 S&P 500 companies, but maybe they blew up and down at the tail end of it. But anyways, 264 out of the 505 S&P 500 companies right now have a decline of 2.24%, and it was expected to have a decline of 3%. And so basically, you know, if this ends, I mean, barring a miracle that the other, you know, half of the S&P 500 has a positive 2% to balance this out, we're going to be in an earnings recession where we're going to have two quarters in a row of negative earnings per share on the backs of the stock market going through the frickin' roof. So, I mean, it makes no sense at all. So in terms of my crystal ball, you know, when I should have sold my client put options the end of December, if that's, you know, the one thing you want to, you know, nick me on that I could have done a lot better, or, I, you know, where it would have been a complete home run, would have been, okay, well, if you're thinking that the earnings per share are going down, it should mean that the stock prices are also going down, but yet the stock prices massively increased because the bad news meant that now that the Federal Reserve had a higher likelihood of cutting rates a la 2 hours from now, and that is now the good news. And so, you know, I've seen this coming all along with my good news is bad news presentation, with my perfect storm presentation, with the October 3rd presentation I did. And, you know, as a financial advisor, there's no one, there's besides like me and Peter Schiff, maybe a couple other people out there. This is like the tinfoil hat view. No one thought they'd be cutting rates this year at the end of last year. And so when I just wanted to, and this is like 2 days after Christmas, like I just want to get something out there. You know, I'd like to hang out with my family, but you know, I want to just put it on the record that I think the Fed's going to be cutting rates. And that's what happened. They cut rates. And, you know, and I wish, you know, hopefully there's, and I've got between now and January to offload some of my put options at a better level. But for right now, you know, who knows? It might be a buy the rumor, sell the fact of what happens. And I think the Fed and the stock market is controlling the game. Basically, Jerome Powell is the stock market's bitch, you know, pretty much at this point. And he's going to do whatever he can do, because no one, even if you think it's a big conspiracy, nobody wants anything to collapse underneath their watch. And so Jerome Powell, I think, realizes that Donald Trump, you know, now the 4D chess aspect of this is, well, Donald Trump is going to win either way because, you know, he was out in front of this and he basically said the Fed needed to cut rates a long time ago. And so he's going to be able to blame the Fed no matter what happens. But the problem is 99% of Americans could give two, you know, what's about the Federal Reserve. They could barely even spell Federal Reserve. And they don't know what the difference between the Fed and the Treasury is. And this is stuff that myself and your audience cares about. But outside of us and some of the Tea Party type people from way back when, most people could care less about the Federal Reserve. They have no idea what it means.
Most people could not care less.
They could not care less. And but I do have to get going to.
Thanks for this explanation, and I think we need to spend some more time on it because things are different. But it's the same people doing the same kind of things for the same reason. They just call it something different. But it's the same thing, and it's going to have the same result, except that what's different this time is before they did it with this unilateral, hegemonic, arrogant, we can do kiss my butt because we were the only reserve currency. When that changes, and don't think that a lot of other countries and regions and coalitions of other banks and so on, they sit there and go, yeah, you know, we're going to do something different, which is where Bitcoin was born out of. And if you have a crypto that gets all fiated and getting lay hands on and it's easy, somebody else is doing it, here it comes, which is what the Lira is, Libra or whatever. The Libra with Facebook is kind of our answer to that. But I'm thinking somebody somewhere, some else is going to do something, and I want to get out of the way of all of it and get my pirate money. When you do that, a lot of it's like it always was, precious gems, gold and silver. I mean, you know, it's precious metals and what, it's going to be commodity. And, that's what's going to protect us. But your retirement's all locked up in this stuff. They got you by the shorts, man. And I'm telling you, we need to understand it. Tim Pachot's helping us out. TheLibertyAdvisor.com. Thanks a lot, Tim. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys, for having me, and talk to you guys later.
All right, peace.
Peace.